That's probably, sorry.
Yeah, woman, not woman, but
woman. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So, that's because that's how people, at least our audience would better identify that movement. Israel tried to capitalize on that as well. And, you know, there's this whole trend of like Israeli women cutting their hair or something like that, you know, saying that they were standing in solidarity with Iranian women or whatever. So all of this is like really important kind of context to the current moment and understanding both Israel's attack and also like Israel's attack, Israel's motives here, and also, you know, not just the motives behind the military aggression, but also the motives behind kind of the propaganda war that Israel is undergoing. So,
and also, if I can also just jump in, I think also the what's important is the motives of the people's movement that was rallying behind the banner of the Zen Zendi Azadi Woman Life Freedom movement, which is originally a Kurdish feminist movement that was specifically against imperialism, capitalism, patriarchy. And so without even that, Israel's sort of Israel's attempt to co-opt this movement is again like one of the biggest underminers of the Zen Zendegi Azadi movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a big question now that we're seeing a lot of, and we've covered a lot of really important ground, but it always kind of, especially for people around the world in the diaspora, the question I think that people always come back to, it's the question that everyone's had witnessing the genocide unfold in Palestine, is what can we do? What can we do about it? You're an organizer. So, I know it's a big question, but I don't
expect
you to have like, the answer, but I'm curious to hear from you. At this moment, when war is being weaponized along with isolation, you know, against Iran, what does effective solidarity look like from the diaspora, from the world, and what kind of organizing do you think is most urgently needed right now?
Absolutely, yeah. I definitely don't have all of the answers or any of the answers, but I think right now it's hard to say like. Immediately, everybody needs to be doing this. And I also understand, like, my friends right now, my family are reeling from this. Like, they barely are existing. They're like shell of people right now, just consuming the news, forgetting meals, not drinking water, having headaches. You know, this is, I recognize that. And at the same time, I also want to name that being able to direct this anger, direct these high emotions towards something that feels productive, and that's what we urgently need right now, is also a cathartic way of coping that I invite people who are struggling to figure out how to cope, I invite them into organizing. And I think that there are a plethora of things that people can do right now. I think it's important in a moment like this, time is not on our side. And I think that we should be very much focused on what is strategic and what is urgent, as well as long-term goals that I think should be happening at the same time. So right now, I think as we've talked about on this, you know, so far, is that U.S. and Western media, as part of the war machine, are sort of currying U.S. favor for a more direct and explicit U.S. involvement in this aggression against Iran. And so I think it is absolutely important for Iranian scholars, Palestinians, everybody who can write right now to be drawing these same connections, to be undercutting and publishing op-eds, pushing back on these headlines that are coming out that are just so disgusting, and being able to actually put forth the alternative narrative. And it is important that we draw that red line right now. We draw that red line within the Iranian community, that you are either a Vatan Furush or a traitor, or you're anti-war, and there's no conversation beyond that. This is the line. And we have to draw that here in the United States too. You are either for the mass death, including continuous extraction or displacement of resources for domestic, you know, use toward death abroad, or you're not. And I think we have to be drawing these lines very, very clearly and carefully before or as they are also being drawn on the other side. So I think there is a right now a war over the narrative, and I think that it is imperative that people who have the ability to enter in on the front lines of that do so. I also think that there are so many tech workers who are from our countries, and most of Israel's technology or so much of Israel's weaponry and technology and infrastructure and information is coming through collaboration with primarily U.S. companies and tech companies that are getting these massive deals, both with the United States Department of Defense as well as Israel. And so I think it's important that tech workers right now join ongoing campaigns such as No Tech for Apartheid or other sort of internal worker organizing that can happen to withhold labor that is going into supporting a genocide as well as aggression against Iran and other countries.
Thank you so much, Huda, for joining us, for sharing your very important perspective during this time. And like you said, I just wanted to reinforce that this, obviously, what is happening right now has very real consequences for millions and millions and millions of people in Iran and the Iranian diaspora. But whether it's in Palestine or Iran, the Zionist regime, Israel, is employing its colonial tactics everywhere and enacting violence on populations across the region. And it's important that people identify the connections between these things and understand that this is not isolated. So thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we are hoping for safety and security of your family and your friends and for everybody in Iran. And we hope that this does not result in further death, further violence, and further escalation for the people in the region. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Yumna, for your time.
Israel's defense minister has ordered intense strikes on Tehran just hours after President Trump announced a fragile ceasefire. Iran denied the accusations that it violated the U.S. and Qatar brokered truce. President Trump spoke to reporters on the White House lawn before leaving for the NATO summit in The Hague this morning. He expressed extreme frustration with both countries, but especially Israel.
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I've never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what they're doing. Do you understand that?
F-bombs and real bombs. President Trump also posted on social media, quote, Israel, do not drop those bombs. If you do, it is a major violation. Bring your pilots home now, unquote. President Trump first announced the ceasefire on social media Monday in the wake of an Iranian missile attack on the largest U.S. base in the Middle East in Qatar. Qatar condemned the strike as a, quote, flagrant violation of Qatar's sovereignty. Iran gave advance notice before the strike, and there were no injuries reported. This retaliatory strike followed the U.S. dropping bombs on three Iranian nuclear facilities Sunday and 12 days of fighting between Israel and Iran after Israel launched an initial unprovoked attack. For more, we're joined by Trita Parsi in Washington, D.C. He's the executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, author of several books, including Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and The Triumph of Diplomacy. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Trita. So much has happened in the last 2 weeks, but let's talk about the last hours. If you can talk about Israel's attack on Iran, Iran's retaliation, then U.S. dropping these bombs, the significance of this, and then supposedly a fragile ceasefire in effect.
I think Trump is discovering the very core of the problem. And I think we can see his frustration here. And the core of the problem at the end of the day is that Israel does not want peace. Israel wants to continue this war. Israel wants only unilateral ceasefires in which it is allowed to continue to bomb the countries in question. That's exactly what it has done in Gaza. That's what it has done in Lebanon. And he wanted the same thing here. And he wanted to make sure that the United States could not keep itself out of the war that Israel unnecessarily started. I think there's a part of Trump that he genuinely wants to get to a deal. I think the manner and the pathways to that that he's choosing are the wrong ones. But I think he was genuine about getting this ceasefire, staying out of this. We have seen the revolt that has taken place in large parts of his own base. And now he's discovering that the Israelis at the end of the day wanted to drag him to this point in order to keep him in the war, not allowing him to get out of the war or not allowing a peace or a ceasefire to break out.
And Chita, I wanted to ask you, we've had the reports in the U.S. media that clearly that Iran warned the United States before launching its counterstrike on the U.S. base. But only there's been a report by Amwaj Media, which is an operation out of Qatar that covers Iran and Iraq and the Arabian Peninsula. And they claim that the United States warned Iran before the attacks on the nuclear facilities, and as a result, Iran was able to remove most of its enriched uranium, and that there were no casualties on the Iranian side in those attacks. Have you heard anything differently, or do you put much credence in this report?
I do strongly believe this report. Amwaj has proven itself to be one of the absolute top news sites in order to understand what is going on in Iran. And their sources have been completely impeccable. But I also think that this is actually in line with past patterns as well, in which both sides, every once in a while, when they want to do something, but they don't want it to be too escalatory, they don't want the situation to get out of control, have given each other direct or indirect warnings. In this case, clearly the Iranians telegraphed very clearly what they were going to do. The Qataris knew about it long beforehand. But it was also a way for the Iranians to do something that went beyond what they did after Qasem Soleimani was killed by Trump in 2020, in which they struck U.S. bases in Iraq. This time they struck it in a GCC country, making it quite different from what it was in 2020. But at the same time, it was nevertheless done in such a way that there would be no casualties, providing the U.S. with no reason to escalate further, rather give both themselves and the United States an exit ramp out of this, which Trump clearly took very quickly, moving towards a ceasefire that he had to impose on the Israelis. And we're seeing now how unhappy the Israelis are about that.
And you said that the current escalation is not about nuclear proliferation. What do you think is the motivation, especially for Israel?
Well, from the Israeli standpoint, for more than three decades now, this has not been about nuclear issue. It's been about domination in the region, a geopolitical rivalry that they have with Iran, a significant fear that they have that if the United States and Iran were to negotiate, if they were to strike a deal, reduce their tensions, Iran would end up not necessarily becoming a friend of the United States, but tensions between the U.S. and Iran would reduce significantly without it necessarily reducing Israeli-Iranian tensions, which then would leave the Israelis in a position of abandonment, as they call it, and they would face Iran without having this type of automatic support of the United States. This is long in the making. If the Israeli concern truly was non-proliferation, then they would have supported Obama's Iran deal, the JCPOA, because it did close off all patterns for Iran to build a nuclear weapon. But Israel's preference was and remains an Iran that may have a nuclear weapon, but that is isolated, is at conflict with the United States, whose economy is being crushed, than an Iran that does not have nuclear weapons, but has improved ties with the U.S., is trading with the rest of the world, is rehabilitated into the international community, and as a result, can challenge Israel's position in the region and its aim for military hegemony, even though it does not have nuclear weapons.
Trina, I wanted to get your comment on Vice President J.D. Vance. He appeared on Fox News yesterday to tout the long-term effectiveness of U.S. airstrikes on Iran.
Our hope is that the lesson that the Iranians have learned here is, look, we can fly a bunker buster bomb from Missouri to Iran completely undetected without landing once on the ground, and we can destroy whatever nuclear capacity you build up. I think that lesson is what's going to teach them not to rebuild their nuclear capacity.
So that was the vice president. And if you could elaborate further on why you're arguing that this U.S. attack on Iran has destabilized the world to, as you say, nuclear countries, nuclear bomb capable, you know, countries, both the United States and Israel attacking a non-nuclear country, Iran, what it says to other non-nuclear countries around the world, who gets attacked and who doesn't.
I think the vice president's point is not one that needed to be made. I don't think the Iranians under any circumstance were under the illusion that the United States did not have the capability of bombing that facility. Whether the U.S. has the capability of truly destroying it or not remains to be seen, because we still have not gotten the final report of what type of damage was done here. I fear that the conclusion the Iranians will draw, which goes to your second point, is, and not just Iran, many other countries as well, is that you had here two nuclear-equipped countries attacking a non-nuclear state in the midst of negotiations, despite the fact that none of the nuclear-equipped countries had been attacked by a non-nuclear state. Israel was not attacked by Iran. Israel initiated this conflict. The United States certainly was not attacked by Iran. It initiated this round of attacks. There is no basis for claiming this to be self-defense, even anticipatory self-defense. What this then says to a lot of other countries, not just in the region, but throughout the world, is that you are completely unsafe vis-a-vis nuclear powers. And if you want to have some sort of an ability to deter nuclear powers from attacking you, you may have to become a nuclear power yourself. So I think this was a major blow to the non-proliferation treaty, similar to the manner in which many people in Washington argue that Russia's invasion, illegal invasion of Ukraine, was a blow to the non-proliferation treaty, since Ukraine actually hosted nuclear weapons before the breakup of the Soviet Union. So if that is the case in the Russian-Ukrainian case, it certainly is the case also in the Israeli-US-Iranian case. So I think that even though in the short run, some limitations may have been put, the Iranian program may have been delayed, I fear that this is going to dramatically motivate the Iranians to build a nuclear deterrence, and it will do so as well for other countries in the region, particularly Turkey and Saudi Arabia, and then, of course, beyond the region as well.
And Trito, what do you make of the reported divisions within the MAGA base over what is happening in Iran? Clearly, President Trump's scoffing at the Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, assessment that Iran was not building a nuclear weapon, and also Tucker Carlson and other key voices of the MAGA movement criticizing what's going on.
The whole movement towards some form of either confrontation with Iran, as we now have seen by the United States, but also the endorsement and the support that was provided by the United States to Israel's war of aggression on Iran, are things that I think has put a tremendous amount of strain within the MAGA movement and within the Republican Party. The only element of the Republican Party that's really genuinely has supported this is the more hawkish neoconservative base, which only has a base in Washington. There's no constituency for that outside of Washington. The rest of the United States much more falls into America First base of Trump support. And within that, you can see some very clear strains, because many of these individuals have truly adopted the view that the United States should stay out of these unnecessary wars, that the United States oftentimes is being dragged into these conflicts by some of its allies. And for some time, many of the folks on the right could manage to hold that view, but make an exception for Israel. But over the last year or so, I think it's become clear that that cognitive dissonance no longer was sustainable. Because if you make an exception for Israel, mindful of the fact that it is the country most likely to drag the U.S. into another war in the Middle East, at least, then you have kind of negated the principle as a whole. And I think we have seen that cognitive dissonance break down with individuals like Tucker Carlson and others going out long before this, really criticizing the role of Israel in terms of pushing the U.S. into wars. And now when this has happened, we see clearly how betrayed much of that base feels. Now, I think many of them, of course, want to get back into Trump's good graces, but not without making sure that the U.S. doesn't get dragged into this war. And I think part of the reason why Trump also was quite eager to get to a ceasefire, why he's so frustrated with what the Israelis are doing right now, is precisely because he's very much aware of the strain that all of this has caused within his own support base.
If you missed parts of the show, you can go to Security's website at security.ca and listen to it again. All the episodes are archived on our page. Just click on the name of the show and you will find them. You will also find the link to the archive on CFRC's website at cfrc.ca. You were listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
KPP Concerts has a stacked lineup of all-ages concerts happening at the Broom Factory through the summer into early fall. On June 27th, check out Housewife, followed by Friday's Child at the Broom Factory on July 11th. Then on August 10th, enjoy music from hip-hop artist Matt Mack, followed later by The Dirty Nil on September 19th. Then on September 26th, it's Petite Belle Yvonne and neo-grunge icons The Bridge City Sinners coming to town on September 27th. And then Yukon Blonde gets us into the fall spirit on September 28th. All shows are all ages at the Broom Factory and co-presented by CFRC 101.9 FM. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a track from One More Day, the debut EP from local indie rockers Carnelian. The new EP captures the ache of parting ways and the beauty of what once was. Born from their time together in Kingston, the song traces the bittersweet sentiment of graduation, the lingering effects of broken relationships, and a quiet uncertainty about what's next. Overall, One More Day distills the band's undergraduate years into musical snapshots, a time and place preserved in something lasting and worth remembering. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via Visit Kingston Music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream One More Day by Carnelian on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Right Lane with us now here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Stairway, you lost one of your shoes, and you asked.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by local EDM artist Yuta Monique. The new track called Is This Mind Control showcases Yuta Monique's signature blend of high-energy beats and infectious melodies. The song also captures the spirit of the genre, inviting listeners to move, connect, and get lost in the rhythm. Drawing inspiration from the values of EDM culture, including peace, love, unity, and respect, Yuta Monique's song celebrates the way music brings people of all ages, backgrounds, and identities together in a shared experience of joy and unity. Want to be highlighted next time? Completely release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Is This Mind Control by Yuta Monique on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by the Healy Brothers. The song First in Line is best described as a vibe, balancing upbeat pop energy with the emotional weight of unbalanced relationships. The track explores the longing to be more than just an option, pairing a driving rhythm with lyrics that invite both reflection and movement. Though this marks their first official release with Jadens, the creative process flowed naturally. A late addition, the bridge and rap section brought a new level of cohesion and emotional depth. First in Line is for anyone who's ever found themselves stuck between hope and hesitation. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream First in Line by Healy Brothers on your favorite platform and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM. This week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from New Clarion's second EP, Phonetic. While covering a vast sonic and textural landscape, the EP explores uncomfortable feelings of tension and loss with the aim to make peace and move forward. In particular, the single Bracken moves through folktronica with brooding heaviness, while Song for Beth is more pensively uplifting indie folk. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Phonetic by New Clarion on your favorite platforms and enjoy the single Bracken with us now here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
water with me through the bracken in the sleep. Got this feeling of wayward, uncomforted feet. Will you tarry with me?
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by local act Restless Endangerment called Lilac. Restless Endangerment's lo-fi indie pop sound is captured in Lilac, their debut home-recorded, self-produced track, which aims to capture the feelings that come with growing up, facing change, and falling in love for the first time after heartbreak. The band's debut single is out now on all platforms and was celebrated at a June 6th release party at Next Church with fellow local rockers Interrobang and Two Time. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Lilac by Restless Endangerment on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Every time it's spring again, Cause lilacs are in the air. I see you in that purple dress and the sun inside your hair. So with me, gaze at the sky. Tell me what's on your mind. Cause when I am with you, I see a world so brand new.
Point where all you can do is look back at all the time past. It's too early to do anything to change your future. It's too late to do anything to change the past. So all you can really do is just wait. I think I'm there right now. To be honest, I'm scared. I don't quite know what to do about it. And I can't help but start losing my mind and wondering if it could have been different. It should have been different. I start to wonder if I should just accept what I have or try to make it better. I think I can. What do you think? Can you help me?
Cause every time it's spring again, those lilacs are in the air. I see you in that purple dress and the sun that's on your hair. Sit with me, gaze at the sky. Tell me what's on your mind. Cause when I am with you, I see a world so brand new. I see a world, it's 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 so brand new.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from the Kildare's new album, Faster Than Light. The album is a collection of songs written over many years, exploring themes of connection, relationships, and the emotional moments in between. While some tracks lean into darker reflections, there's a thread of optimism and hope throughout, rooted in the belief that every connection holds meaning. From the open road energy of The Escape to the quiet nostalgia of Lake Vernon and the tension of That One, the songs aim to create vivid, moving spaces that resonate with both head and heart. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Faster Than Light by the Kildare's on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called The Escape with us here now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
just disappear into the night. Love, I swear, they'll never know we're gone.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by rockers The Winter in Canada called Wolves. This high-octane alt-rock track with punk edges and soaring vocals balances raw fury with undeniable hooks. Built on distorted guitars, driving bass, and thunderous drums, Wolves captures the chaos and clarity of confronting the people in power and realizing they'll let you down. Fans of Foo Fighters, Soundgarden, and Queens of the Stone Age will feel right at home with The Winter in Canada, known for their raucous live sets and blazing musicianship. Their new single, Wolves, is a statement of intent, loud, passionate, and impossible to ignore. Stay tuned for their new album to be released in July. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Wolves by The Winter in Canada on your favorite platforms and enjoy it with us here now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Yeah, let's go.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Quaymo!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
on CFRC 101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. You'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephone interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from local artist Abby Louise's debut EP called Home, composed of six mellow songs and a meditative spoken word outro. The new EP is inspired by the beauties of Mother Earth and the power of music. Home draws listeners into a calming yet uplifting vibration. Tune in to hear the influence of R&B, neo-soul, and folk, and feel the love that flows through each song. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Home by Abby Louise on your favorite platforms and enjoy a song from it called Choose Love with us here now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
With us, yeah, the change begins when you look within.